I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Seeing a moose is a little bit like seeing a mythical creature. Those long, spindly legs and then enormous bodies on top. Their strange, almost equine heads with those enormous lips and nose. But seeing a moose in Vermont is getting rarer and rarer. The population has been halved in less than a decade, and it looks like we have a parasitic brainworm and a rise in winter ticks to blame. Though, really, we probably have climate change to blame. So if Vermont wants to continue to be a state with moose, is there any action we can take? The state still allows limited hunting of moose, but the hunts are not enough to decimate the population. Are there other ways to boost the survival rate? We're going to talk about it today, and I'm joined by Fish and Wildlife Department Senior Biologist Scott Darling. Hi, Scott. Nice to have you back.
Hi, Jane. It's great to be back.
We always seem to talk about animals in peril. I'm not sure really we want to see you on this show.
Yes, Dr. Death is back, huh?
So where does the population stand right now, as far as we know, for moose?
Well, our moose population is sitting pretty much around 1,750 moose, and that is significantly down from our population objectives of 3,000 moose. And if you think back of the history of the brief history of the return of moose in Vermont, here they were returning in the 1980s to our forests. They actually then increased even above the habitat carrying capacity in the early 2000s. And now we're struggling to a great degree based on warming climate and the effects of these two parasites in particular that are having a toll on our moose.
Yeah, I mean, we think about 2005, it was estimated that there were about 5,000 moose and 1,700-ish now. That's a precipitous decline.
It is. And some of this is intentional, I will tell you. In the early 2000s, when we had almost 4 moose per square mile in the core of our range, moose range in northeastern Vermont, we were observing over-browsing of the forest, high numbers of motor vehicle collisions. We, to date, have had 19 people die on the highways in collisions with moose.
You mean over time?
Over time, yes. And we also then begin to observe declines in the weights of moose and the number of calves that were being produced. And so we intentionally increase hunter permit numbers in order to bring that population down to a level where it would be healthier. And what did happen is we continued to see some of these declines. And at the same time, states, our sister agencies in New Hampshire and Maine, were conducting some very important research documenting the effects of winter ticks on their moose populations.
So at that point, Vermont Fish and Wildlife reduced the number of hunting permits, but you're still seeing this decline.
We significantly reduced permit numbers beginning in 2010 and have continued to do so. Very interestingly enough, we're beginning to see some leveling off of that decline, particularly in the Northeast Kingdom. So there is some optimism there that some of the steps we have taken by reducing permit numbers and by shifting the harvest strictly to adult males or bulls, that we are really like kick-starting the engine for some population growth there.
But the reason why moose are not surviving is, you believe, because of parasitic brainworms and winter ticks.
Correct. Yes, there are two parasites of concern. The winter tick, which is important, it's a different tick species than the black-legged tick, which everyone knows for its relationship with Lyme disease. But the winter tick is a species that is native to the northeastern Vermont. It's less common in southern Vermont. And the life cycle of this tick is an important part of this story and how it relates to climate change. When the tick is in the larval stage, it is in the fall, is going to climb up onto vegetation and seek a host species to feed on for the winter. And the longer it is able to do that, the more likely it is to find a host. And one of its primary hosts is the moose. And as it then attaches to the moose, it feeds throughout the winter. And then it drops off as an adult in April. And if it lands on snow in April, there's a higher mortality of those adult ticks. But if it lands on bare ground, those ticks are more likely to survive to produce more eggs. So you have two windows of time for this tick that are very important. The longer the falls are, the later the winter shows up, the more time that tick has to find a host, and the earlier springs enable it to survive is much better as well.
So we did get a question from Liz who says, well, surely this cold snap has done in the ticks. And we know that black-legged ticks are susceptible to very cold weather. That can be really helpful in killing ticks at this time of year, that kind of tick. Are winter ticks susceptible to cold?
I wish so, but unfortunately, these animals now are riding on the backs of moose, and so they have this tremendous heavy black coat of fur that they can survive on. So unfortunately, that is not the big factor in the tick abundance. It'll be the fall and the spring weather.
Listeners, while we're talking about moose populations, the moose herd, and why moose are suffering from winter ticks and parasitic brainworm, and then as well, what can be done to help stabilize the herd, we'd love to get your input, your questions. Our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Scott Darling, what happens when a moose is carrying a lot of ticks?
Well, it's a really an impressive story. When we have our research has been conducted this past winter, we did find mortality on our calves from abundance of winter ticks on them. And basically, these ticks can number in the tens of thousands. This past winter, the calves that died in our study averaged 21,000 ticks on them, the most having 27,000 ticks. States such as New Hampshire have counted upwards of 60,000 ticks on a moose. And their calculations are that those ticks are essentially draining anywhere from 60 to 150% of the blood volume of a calf moose.
How can it drain 150% of the blood
well,
volume?
Well, just those numbers and that quickly.
Oh, I see. So it's – okay. Yeah. Because so, theoretically, once you've drained 100%,
you're dead.
Yeah.
Yes. And so these animals are dying of anemia. And in some cases at levels of 75%.
Wow.
Last year in our study area, we observed the 40% mortality of our calves that were collared in our study.
So calves are particularly vulnerable because they're smaller. They have presumably less blood and less body. But there's also an issue, too, with scratching, right? I mean, don't moose scratch their hides when they're itching from the ticks, and that can make them vulnerable?
Yes. Not only is there a loss of blood volume and anemia issue, but for whatever reason, moose are not able to preen themselves of these ticks. And so their best attempt to do that is to scratch and scratch to try to rub them off. And then what you begin to see later on in the winter is hair loss on these animals. And it can be to the extent where they end up dying from hypothermia.
So they're scratching off these ticks. In some cases, they're dying of anemia. The calves are particularly vulnerable. And then cows, female moose, are also more vulnerable than the bulls?
Yes. There are two issues at play. One is the calf mortality, direct mortality from having so many ticks on them. And the other impact is while it does not necessarily kill the cow moose, the adult female, it can deplete her of important nutritional status. And so how that affects her productivity is another factor in the population declines because of winter ticks.
Why aren't deer as affected by these ticks?
They can get these ticks, but they are much more able to get them off, pick them off. And whether they have evolved with ticks a little bit longer, I don't know. But that they have that ability that a larger, less agile moose does not.
So we're looking at ticks and brainworms, but how problematic are the ticks in this population decline?
The ticks are really some of the primary drivers behind this. What we had in the early 2000s was a high population of moose in the northeastern part of Vermont that became almost this factory of moose that spilled out into the rest of Vermont, down all the way to the Massachusetts border. And where you have this other issue of the brainworm coming into play is in southern Vermont, we have higher deer populations than we do in northeastern Vermont. And deer can carry this brainworm without it affecting them. But when they transmit it to moose, it's almost always fatal.
Why? Do you know why?
It's simply a matter of evolution of having had that brainworm over millennia, but the moose not having that. There was a time when the range of moose and deer were very separate.
And so that's climate change as well, this combining of the range of moose and deer?
Yes. And our concern is if we have mild winters over time, your deer populations will expand. Will we be able to control them enough to keep moose on the landscape?
Can you describe, it's pretty gruesome, but describe what happens to a moose who has this brain worm?
Well, it's a worm that affects the central nervous system of the moose, and it becomes very confused. It doesn't move around a lot, becomes malnourished, and in its worst condition, it becomes immobile and starts just simply circling around in a very small area. Many times people who have observed moose in residential areas that are hanging out for weeks, if not months, that's most likely the case that it has brain worm.
And do you know how many moose are getting brain worm?
Well, we keep track of those that are suspect, and we test some of those, but it requires a lab analysis. And we have seen an increase over time in the number of moose that we suspect have been killed by brain worm.
You know, you were talking about some of the research that's been done by Fish and Wildlife Departments in New Hampshire and Maine that's really helped inform Vermont on what's happening to moose. And I know that game wardens have been looking at things like winter ticks for several years now. I remember at one way station I went and visited a few years back now, they were checking for ticks when a moose had been brought in by a hunter as part of the biological check on the moose. But you're actually doing different kind of research now, not just checking moose that are killed by hunters during hunting season.
Yes, we are. And New Hampshire and Maine have been doing this kind of a study for several years. And they were very much interested in Vermont participating in this study because of our recent history where we purposely reduced the density of moose because there is suspected a relationship between moose densities and winter tick abundance. And so we embarked on this study as well. We have the real benefit of having the expertise and experience in New Hampshire and Maine to help us. Perhaps the international expert on moose and winter ticks is Dr. Pete Pekins from the University of New Hampshire. And so this is a case where we actually have contracted out with a crew from Nevada who comes and captures moose from Maine all the way through Vermont and does so in a rather dramatic fashion, I might add, with use of a helicopter where they drive the moose into an opening and then brave soul leans out of the helicopter, shoots a rocket net over the moose that tumbles the moose, and then two fellas get out and tackle the moose and hobble its legs and blindfold it and can literally put a GPS collar on it, extract some blood for our labs, tests in the case of calves, weigh it, and count the ticks on it all within about 10 minutes. And then they move on to their next moose.
It sounds pretty traumatizing for the moose.
Well, you know, what's really advantageous about this process is they don't need chemical immobilization. So there's always a risk when you're doing that with an animal as well as with the biologist. And so once they blindfold the moose, it really is relatively docile.
Okay, so they're doing this radio collaring, so and then counting the ticks. And counting the ticks, I understand, in the middle of winter is very different than counting the ticks during hunting season. You're likely to get a different number, and that's pretty important as you try to look at the winter tick population on moose.
Absolutely, Jane. Yes. For years, we've been counting the tick samples during the hunting season on moose that are brought into our check stations. And that has given us some hope that those numbers were, in fact, lower than what was detected in Maine and New Hampshire.
The one that I saw, I think she couldn't even find a tick. The game warden was looking and looking and looking, and she couldn't find any ticks on this bull.
So that led to this hypothesis that maybe Vermont's lower moose population might, in fact, benefit the species and have fewer ticks. But now we're finding that the counts that are done in January are probably more effective. And it makes sense because if you have a later fall, our hunting season is occurring before all of those ticks have found moose to overwinter on.
Let's go to Vicki, who's calling in from Wardsboro. Hi, Vicki. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I was curious. I know that when we have rabies issues here in the state, there are little things that are dropped in the forest that the animals consume, and that takes care of the rabies. And I was wondering if there was something that could be done for the ticks, similar to what I give my dog and cat, something that they consume that makes the ticks die when they bite them.
Vicki, that's a great question. It actually is one of the most common questions we get. Why are we spending time and money capturing moose when we can just try to solve this problem through means like that. And I'll tell you a couple of things that it's very challenging to deal with the release of insecticides or any kind of chemicals or biological controls out in the wild. It's interesting. A few weeks ago, I was looking up the Bravecto, which is the insecticide dose that you can give your pet or cat, your dog or cat, in order to avoid them of insects, particularly ticks and fleas. And there was, if you can imagine, there was a long period where they had to test those animals in a lab. They had dogs right there that they could monitor. Whereas when you go to do something in the wild, it's much more significant of an effort. And I go back to my history working on bats. In 2010, there was talk of treating white nose syndrome with chemicals or biological controls. But you still had this process of before you can release anything into the wild, you have to do all of these tests. Test whether it can kill the fungus, test whether it kills the bat, does it kill any other animal? And still to this day, there is no treatment for white nose syndrome. And the other factor that comes into play is probably just a matter of economics. You can imagine yourself as an employee of Merck realizing the financial gains from coming up with a treatment for ticks on domestic dogs. But what is there for a market for coming up with a treatment for a moose population that's pretty much limited to the northeastern United States and parts of the Rockies?
So is that a non-starter? I mean, is there work being done on that?
I'm not aware of any work being done on that. And I think the moose biologists probably are starting to think about how we can deal with that. But from my perspective, it's a long road. And I think our focus right now has been on, are there management actions that we can take to mitigate the effects of the winter ticks on our moose population?
We're going to get into some of that, including hunting, in just a moment. But going back to what we've talked about in the past for other kinds of ticks, are there predators? Are there things like possums, you know, guinea fowl for black-legged tick? But are there predators that we're perhaps not favoring right now that we could try to boost that might help with the winter tick population?
Well, I think there's plenty of research to do on that. And, you know, there is there has been the suggestion that more possums because they tend to eat ticks. But whether they are a factor in controlling ticks is another whole thing.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today, we're looking at what's happening with Vermont's moose population. Their steep decline has a lot of people worried, but there aren't a lot of concrete answers about how to help halt it. We're talking with Scott Darling, a senior biologist with the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. He's been with the department since 1982. Scott Darling, we were talking a little bit about the fact that moose hunting, it's gone up and down in the state over the last couple of decades, and the department uses hunting as a regulation tool to try to control populations of game animals, including moose. You were trying to get to a population of about 3,000 from about 5,000 at its peak. Now we're seeing moose at about 1,700 or so. There is still limited hunting. How many permits do you know were given out in 2017?
In 2017, we gave out 80 permits, and there were some additional permits that were a part of that. So in the end, there were 88 permits, and we ended up harvesting 40 moose across the state.
So that's a small number, but why allow hunting at all if you're worried about the moose population?
Well, it's a very good question. It's an important question. And one of the factors that comes into play here as we rethink how we should be managing moose in the face of brain worms and winter ticks is there seems to be a relationship between moose densities and the winter tick abundance. And it makes sense that if there are more host animals for the ticks, then they will be able to more likely grab onto a host, survive the winter, and reproduce the following year. And research has shown that if you have moose densities anywhere from between 0.75 and 1.3 moose per square mile, that would lessen the impacts of winter ticks on moose. And we currently have about a density of about 1.05 moose per square mile in the northeastern part of the state. So it's within that range, which is, we think, a good thing. Our goal for this area, as you may know, is 1.75 moose per square mile. That may no longer be realistic or wise. And so we are very interested in seeing, one, if our population begins to respond to the lower permit numbers and the restriction of harvesting to adult males. But then we need to ask ourselves if, in fact, we should be making sure this population doesn't exceed that threshold where winter ticks can play a more active role in controlling and killing moose.
And for the permits that are granted, are these given out for certain wildlife management districts or hunting districts? So not just if you get a permit, you can hunt a moose anywhere. It's more targeted to where you see that higher population density.
That's correct. They are allocated by a wildlife management unit, and there's about 21 of them across the state.
Let's go to Pat, who's calling in from Stowe. Hi, Pat. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm really interested in the moose population. I lived in Vermont for 23 years, and I certainly have seen a decline in the number of moose I have seen wandering around in my yard even. So my question is, when an archer wounds an animal and does not recover it, shouldn't that go towards their bag limit? I know other states do this, and I just think it's critical to the moose population that any animal that is not recovered be counted towards one that has been killed.
Scott Darling?
Yes. Thanks, Pat, for your question. And surely wounding any animal and not being able to harvest it is something that no hunter wants and appreciates very much, the effort to try to harvest that animal and bring it out of the woods. There may well be a question of enforcement and how on earth you could simply enforce that for someone who either would not inform you. I think the reality is that ethics, of course, are how you behave when nobody's watching, and that's an important part of hunting. We do have surveys of moose hunters, and I don't have the data in front of me, Pat, but we could find the data perhaps to see what kind of wounding rates there were. For the most part, these animals generally, I would think, would be less apt to be wounded and lost as opposed to some other animals. But I appreciate your comments.
And let's go now to Brenna Galdenzi, president of Protect Our Wildlife. Brenna, you're on the line. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Brenna.
Protect Our Wildlife, you know, we are against the moose hunt in general. But as I understand it, are you issuing moose permits for all the different WMUs across the state, even in areas where you don't have a moose density like you would have in the Northeast Kingdom? Are you issuing moose permits for across the entire state? And if you are, why not, at the very least, only issue moose permits in areas of the state with a higher moose density like the Northeast Kingdom?
Brenna, very good question. And first of all, I don't have any, you know, we do not have plans at this point in time for any recommendation for managing moose in 2018. That's going to be developed in the next 2 months. In the past years, we have hunted moose mostly throughout the state, but in some areas in the last couple of seasons, we have not hunted moose in certain wildlife management units where the population has gone and down, and it seems to need a kick to get it back up. I think an important consideration that is before the department is whether we identify and develop thresholds for where moose hunting would stop in wildlife management units, as you have prescribed, so that it would be somewhat of a contract for when we would stop hunting moose, as well as I think what might be important, particularly where winter tick impacts can occur, to have some kind of threshold where hunting would pick up again in order to limit the population growth.
But you'll be working on that in the coming months, you say?
That's correct.
Well, let's get another voice in here while we're talking about hunting. Ed Gallo is a lifelong hunter based in Richmond, and he has served on the state's Fish and Wildlife Board. He's also currently vice president of HAT, the Hunters, Anglers, and Trappers Association of Vermont. Ed, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
What's your perspective on the question of hunting and moose as we look at a population decline of the state's moose?
Well, there's no question that the moose have declined significantly over the past few years. It wasn't that long ago that a relatively short walk in the woods would you'd bump into one or two moose and see them. And now you can go quite a while without seeing a moose. I think the state's data says an average of 32 hours or something like that between moose sightings by people who are reporting it.
So, you know, you have observed this decline. I can say the same in the, my neck of the woods. You know, there were moose we used to see or see on game cameras that we're not seeing anymore. So do you think hunting is still a reasonable part of the management plan for moose?
Well, I think hunting is really, Scott can please correct me if I'm wrong, but hunting is really the only management tool that the Fish and Wildlife Department has to affect the actual number of moose on the landscape. And, you know, as long as their research supports the fact that there can be a moose hunt. Now, when I was on the board, we were putting out upwards of 1,200 permits a year at about a 50% success rate. So you're talking roughly, give or take, 600 animals being harvested. And now we're down to like 40 this year. So the department seems to be doing what it can to manage the hunters and the number of permits that are put out.
Do you hunt moose, Ed?
Yes, I do.
And what's the appeal for you?
Most of my hunting, we hunters, anglers, trappers are a sponsor for the moose permit that's allowed by the state for children with life-threatening illnesses. So I go on an awful lot of moose hunts and taking these kids out. We try to take a kid out every year, and we've had a pretty good success rate. So I'm fortunate in that I get to hunt more often than most people do for moose.
Well, Ed, I really appreciate you being a part of the show and sharing your perspective and sharing your perspective as a lifelong hunter. Thank you very much for being on the program.
You're welcome.
Ed Gallo is Vice President of the Hunters, Anglers, and Trappers Association of Vermont, HAT. We're still talking with Scott Darling, Senior Biologist with Vermont Fish and Wildlife. And let's go to Rob in Colchester. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
Well, I understand that ticks play a part now, but I also am a member of Hunters, Anglers, and Trappers. And I participated in the kids' moose hunt, which we've done for a long time. And I will tell you, back in the day, when they were giving out, in my estimation, too many permits, you know, we weren't seeing the moose in the woods anymore. We kept warning biologists. Your people that are in the woods are probably your best source of information, in my estimation. And you know what? We used to bring our kids. They were, you know, if they weren't feeling just right, we'd bring them to the weigh station in Island Pond. You know what? Ticks weren't a concern back then. Personally, this is just my opinion. I believe it was money driven. Because a $10 application fee, and they have a lottery for four moose that brings $4,000 to $5,000 per moose. But they were warned. Plenty of biologists were warned. Listen, we're not seeing the moose anymore. You're giving out too many permits. So, I mean, they can blame some of it on climate change, which I personally don't believe in, and that the ticks may be an issue now, but back then they weren't. And I think this is what started the downfall.
Yeah, Rob, let me pick up what you're saying, because it's an interesting point. And, you know, the climate science disagrees with you about the existence of climate change. That science agrees it's there. But the question of the decline in moose population, you know, just as a short time ago as 2008, 2009, Scott Darling, the Fish and Wildlife Department was giving out 1,200 permits for moose. And as you said, you were trying to get the population down to about 3,000. But, you know, then it kept going down and you're seeing these ticks. But could it be hunting that really started this decline and an unhealthy population combined with an overhunting could be a problem?
Well, let me just say that one of the hypotheses is that this dramatic increase in moose population really enabled winter tick abundance to explode. And so you had several things, as you point out, going against the moose. A, their population was very high. Their own health was deteriorating because they were exceeding their habitat carrying capacity. And then it was enabling a winter tick population to explode on their landscape as well. And all of these factors come into play. And if, in hindsight, if we'd done anything better, we probably would have been less conservative and gotten that moose population down earlier before it exploded to nearly 5,000 animals. I think, you know, relative to the information we use to monitor our moose population, we do take advantage of data from people who are out in the woods because one of our primary sources of data is our deer hunter sighting survey. And so we have this opportunity when 55,000 people go out in the woods to hunt deer, that is a sample of those is collecting data for us on a whole host of species, including moose.
So let's go to Steve on this while we're talking about hunters. Steve's calling in from Bennington. Go right ahead.
Hi. So you had mentioned earlier that moose population is affected by the deer population. And my suggestion is that they recently made some changes to hunting with crossbow in the state of Vermont. And I know in New York State, you can hunt with a crossbow with no restrictions. My suggestion is why not change that and open that up to no restrictions on crossbows? Because in my experience, some property owners, including myself, do not want people that they don't know with rifles on their property hunting deer.
So, Steve, let me just clarify. When you're talking about crossbows and hunting, you mean open up crossbow hunting for deer in particular to help control the deer population in the hopes that it might help control or bring up the moose population, right? You're talking about crossbow hunting for deer.
Correct.
Good. All right. So, Scott Darling?
A very good point, Steve. And I'll tell you that our deer management program is completing a three-year study, a comprehensive study of our rules and regulations. As you know, the crossbows have been open for the last 2 years for people 50 years and older. And that will be one of our considerations when we go before the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Board in another year.
So that is a possibility.
Yes, it is.
And do you see increased hunting of deer as one tool that may be considered in terms of trying to help the moose population recover?
Well, research suggests that if you have deer densities that are above 10 to 15 deer per square mile, that you increase the likelihood that brainworm will be transmitted from deer to moose. And up in the Northeast Kingdom, our deer density is now about 7 deer per square mile. And with climate change on the horizon and milder winters, there may be opportunity for that deer population to increase. And the question is, do we in fact then adopt the policy that we are going to keep deer densities in the area where moose overlap at 10 or so deer per square mile?
You know, we're doing some social engineering here, no matter what we do with hunting. And, you know, population density is partly habitat and partly humans and how many animals humans are willing to coexist with. And you talk about this idea of perhaps reducing the density of moose in given areas as a way to help control the tick population. But is there a danger in doing that? That, you know, you try to control it, you try to bring it down low, but if the population is declining and they're really in trouble, you're bringing it low when they're already going lower. And, you know, that could fail, that idea for how to stabilize them.
Well, absolutely, Jane. There's, you know, several different considerations to make. Do you allow boom and bust populations of moose that is driven by winter tick populations, or you try to minimize the effects of winter ticks? And the reality is, in the long term, with climate change, the moose, I think the future of moose is not optimistic in the state of Vermont. But our hopes is that we can do all we can to have a healthy moose herd in this state for as long as we can.
As long as we can. But you think 50, 100 years, no moose?
Well, some of the models predict Vermont's weather will be more like Virginia's, and Virginia doesn't have moose.
So what else are you going to be continuing to study as you do this three-year study?
Well, we're going to continue this research project for the next 2 years. And what's important is that we get, I hope, a variety of conditions and winter tick abundances so we can see the range of the effects of winter ticks on our moose population. And, of course, we're keeping our fingers crossed that the effects we won't be seeing 60-70% mortality in our calves, that somehow there's something different going on in Vermont. But time will tell.
Boy, I hope so. It would be a sad thing to lose all the moose in Vermont. Scott Darling is senior biologist with the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. Thanks very much for talking moose with us today.
Thanks, Jane.